Welcome back to Hour 3 of Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis, filling in for Dave Schrader, who will be back on Monday night. Couple of programming notes for you tomorrow night on Darkness Radio. Jay Bachochin and Mary Marshall will be back with us on Darkness Radio for 2 hours tomorrow night. And then Patrick Burke will join us in the third hour. We'll be talking about Ghost Soldiers of Gettysburg, Searching for Spirits on America's Most Famous Battlefield with Jack Roth. That will be tomorrow night on Darkness Radio. Friday, there is Minnesota Vikings football, but never fear, folks who listen to Darkness Radio on the stream, you will have a brand new episode of Darkness Radio. If you're listening locally, though, on AM 1130 and 103.5 FM, you will have Minnesota Vikings football. However, if you tune in on iHeartRadio, on the iHeartRadio app, or if you listen to us on the stream on darknessradio.com, you will have brand new episode of Darkness Radio. We will be talking to a couple of different people on Friday. We'll be talking about the most infamous haunted house in Europe on Friday. And we've got some other surprises for you as well on Friday. So, again, brand new episode of Darkness Radio instead of football on Friday. See, we do love you people. There you go. A reminder as well that IWI Independent Wrestling International season opens on September 10th. I am your vice president and ring announcer as well for Independent Wrestling International at the Haunted Historic Mounds Theater. A huge card with a huge main event. Ring of Honor star and former ECW champion Steve Corino is in town, and he'll be tag teaming with his son, Ring of Honor star Colby Corino, against our IWI world champion, Ryan Cruz, the one and only Ryan Cruz, and 6% body fat Rob James. That is your main event for September 10th. Tickets are going so quickly for this, folks. It is going to be sold out very, very soon. You want to get your tickets right now at moundstheater.org. I know we're a month away from this already, but you're not going to have tickets. Even in a couple of weeks, you're not going to have tickets for this thing. Moundstheater.org. You can get VIP tickets there. You can get advance discount general admission tickets right there, right now. Moundstheater.org. Let's get into our third hour of our program, shall we? Our guest for the third hour is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz, published author and academic, former legal investigator and paranormal enthusiast who holds 4 advanced degrees in the area of higher education and applied communications with a secondary interest in parapsychology and life after death issues. Dr. Schutz travels to haunted locations within the United States and Europe seeking haunted locations to investigate. From her personal experiences and in interviewing others, she has written nearly 100 illustrated stories in her book series entitled Paranormal Encounters. Some of her books also include a variety of paranormal topics. Let's welcome to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show, Dr. Schutz. How are you doing tonight, Dr. Schutz?
I'm doing really good, thank you, and thank you for having me.
Oh, well, thanks for being here. We appreciate it. You've got nearly 100 documented personal experiences in your paranormal career. How far back can you recall having your first experiences with the paranormal?
Oh, well, let's see. I would say that if I had to think about some of my very first experiences, it was probably around the age of 8 or 9. Back then, though, I can honestly say that if I were having experiences, I might not have known right off the bat what I was truly going through. And so back then, I didn't know much about the paranormal. And as I grew up into my teens, I was actually very, very, very skeptical about whether ghosts truly existed. My belief then, though, was once, and I learned this kind of in my religious roots of my family, was that when a person had passed away, they actually were gone and went directly to heaven, never to come back or to be seen or heard from again. So, of course, growing up with this thought and this type of thinking, it's just natural that you just kind of put that on the back shelf in your mind, that something else probably doesn't exist. And so, essentially, I was pretty much a skeptic. It was up, though, until a point in high school, though, when my beliefs about this started to turn around a little bit. There were a couple teachers that I was a student under who actually reported in the high school paper that they had a ghost in their house. And I thought, well, if the teachers are brave enough to write in a school paper that they had a ghost in their house and what they were doing to try to contact it, that kind of intrigued my curiosity a bit. So I read their story. I thought about some of the issues that happened to their house. The cupboard doors were opening, the water faucets were going on. And their means of contact with this ghost, though, was through a Ouija board. I wouldn't quite recommend the use of a Ouija board. I think most of us know, especially doing this type of work, that they can actually conjure up some bad spirits, and they're actually very difficult to get rid of. So that's where I was initially intrigued by it. However, I started having my own experiences with this probably around the age of, 12 to 14. And I would go to my grandparents' house after school, waiting for my mom to get off work. And sometimes my grandparents would not be home. And so, you know, what do? You're in a house. It's kind of unfamiliar. You turn the TV on. If you're really nervous, sometimes you turn the lights on. You know, anything to kind of distract yourself from an unfamiliar surrounding. So what I chose to do was I just chose simply to go to sleep and try to sleep off my time, as they say, on the couch. Well, one day I woke up from the couch and I heard actually what sounded like conversation and noises coming from the kitchen. And I thought to myself, how on earth could I literally not know that they came home? You know, I must have been really out of it. So I got up. You know, what else do? You get up and you drag yourself over to the kitchen. And I went to the front door. And I looked in, and there was, like, absolutely nobody there. And what it had sounded like before I got to that point was it sounded like there was, like, maybe four or five people having just a very noisy conversation with each other. And it was just that noisy that it woke me up. So I don't know. I stood there, and I looked in the kitchen, and I looked around, and I thought to myself, something is going on here. But, of course, you know, like in most cases or situations, eventually you share this stuff with someone and they kind of pass it off as being your imagination and creating things out of your mind, or maybe it was something to do with your sleeping pattern or whatever. But for the most part, what I did at that point is I just kind of set it aside and didn't think much more of it for a while. Now, it just so happens when I got older, I started researching that property a little bit more and found out and determined that there was actually a woman who died in a fire near the kitchen in that house, probably around the middle 1800s, maybe more like 1850 or something like that. So that was my first experience, but I hope you're sitting down, Tim, for this one, because this one's going to be a good one here.
I always am.
All right. So here's my next experience, and this one kind of sealed the deal for me. It was May of 2007, and it's interesting because I've been reading a lot of reports that a lot of encounters were being reported in 2007. Why, I cannot tell you, but in my particular case, I went to my my other grandparents' house. They lived on a farm, and they had both passed away. And so I wanted to go there and start taking some pictures of the property and the house, because it was actually a very well-built house from my great-great-grandfather. And so what had just happened before I arrived, though, is that there was a tornado, probably an F1 tornado that ripped through the property. And what it did, just before I had gotten there, this was a bad storm day, is it brought down a tree about 200 years old. I know a lightning strike hit the property, and underneath that house was limestone. And if anyone knows their basic ghost 101, they know that some of the conductors and energy absorbers are types of metals and types of stone, and limestone just happens to be one of them. So I get out of my car. I'm walking around, of course. I'm noticing some of the damage. There was a electrical wire that was down at the time. And I was there by myself because I just wanted my moment, you know. And so I went around the house, and I went eventually to the front, and I just kind of looked at the house, and I just kind of felt somber about it because, you know, when you lose your grandparents, it's kind of hard. And I just started snapping pictures. Now, back then, I used a regular camera with print film, okay, and I didn't have a flash on it. And so I just started snapping pictures, okay? So it was about a day later when I processed these pictures that I noticed that there was some kind of a head in the upstairs window. And I thought to myself, in looking at these pictures, this is really odd. I didn't know what to make of it. So believe it or not, being a dinosaur person, if there's anyone out there who can relate to someone who's still with the dinosaur technology, that was me. But that actually encouraged me to go and get a laptop and take a look a little closer at this picture. I had it digitized onto a CD, and then I really looked at it. What was discovered from this image was a very clear image, not only of a little girl, probably around the age of 6, but also a man hovered and standing right over her, who, after doing a lot of research, I believe were my great aunt and my great grandfather. And not only can I mention the fact that it was in a window, there was no window. They appeared to me in a screen. And the window screen. And so there was, like I said, I was just shooting random pictures. But if anyone knows about Ghost 101-ing here, you would know that I had the perfect elements that day. I had literally a lightning strike hitting the limestone, you know, grounding it and causing energy. I had a tree that shook the property, you know, 200 years old, something familiar, but ironically enough, it went away from the house, not toward the house. I had electrical pole wire that was laying on the ground, and I could actually feel in the air this energy, this, you know, that energy. You can hear the static in the air. Mm-hmm. And so if you put all those elements together and you think about it, it was actually a beautiful cocktail here for a manifestation. That picture, by the way, in case anyone's interested, I have it in about 2 or 3 of my books, and I blew up the picture, and the image is actually a very clear picture. So I was very shocked about that. But I also need to include here that I shot the picture around 1 o'clock in the afternoon. The sky was overcast, and essentially, in a nutshell, it just kind of all came together for me. But those started out my intrigue about wanting to learn more about ghosts and how they appear and how they manifest, and that just kind of started me on my journey to want to learn more. From that, though, what I did is I figured, well, if I can shoot my grandparents in my grandparents' house, then maybe I can tap into this and shoot ghosts in other people's homes. And so from that point, I have spent the last good 9 years, I would say, going to many known haunted properties and essentially trying to gather up evidence on the various types of energies that can actually, I guess for what most people would say, is could be a haunted energy, a ghost, an apparition, an anomaly, you name it. So that's kind of where it started out. One of the things, though, that I did learn about myself, which kind of brings me back to my roots, was that I came to realize, and I don't know if anyone out there can even relate to this, but I would say that I would call myself someone who has what is called a sensory sense, which is, it's like a psychic radar to environmental cues. And I need to clarify something for everyone. These ghosts now come to me, and I can't turn it off anymore. Because I'm so open about this, I have had so many types of experiences that I just, sometimes I wish I could turn it off, but I can't. But I'm not psychic. I'm a sensitive intuitive, and with my legal investigator background, I can actually piece together cues, seen or unseen, from things that happen around me or come to me or want to present themselves to me. And from that, I try to determine exactly why they're doing this. And so some people might say, oh, you're an empath. Well, an empath is someone who kind of can sense, even at a higher level, the energies of and presence of what people are feeling. And I would say probably I'm not a total empath, but I would say I'm pretty close to one. And, you know, for example, it's really hard for me to watch really emotional type of, you know, things like violent TV series or, you know, I can actually feel this stuff. And sometimes it bothers me so much that it's exhausting. But I would say that my sixth sensory sense, being very intuitive to my cues and my environmental cues, is what has brought me to this point. So,
very interesting. Let me ask you this, because I'm very interested in the fact that you can't watch a violent TV show.
No.
You know, with most empaths, they can sense the pain of someone who's feeling genuine pain. When someone is acting on a TV show, they're acting. Is it the fact that the actor is portraying pain, that they're trying to feel that pain within? Is that what you're sensing? Or is it that they're sensing, what is it exactly that you feel you're sensing at that moment?
I can feel it. I can feel what they're feeling. Let me talk a little bit about actors.
Sure.
I was just reading an article this morning because I was trying to prepare for this interview. And I did find something that did say that actors can be so, you know how actors are. If you're going to live the part and you're going to convince somebody that you're a good actor, you've got to basically feel it all the way through. Okay, well, some of them are actually very good. We all know that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you can actually just feel their pain. But I'll give you an example. It may not be a great one, but I'll try to explain it. Like, so let's say I'm watching a TV show. Mm-hmm. And let's say it's a violent TV show that involves shooting. To this day, I can honestly tell you that I have a very difficult time watching any violent TV show because, and I know this sounds a little kind of out there, but this is what I'm talking about regarding empaths, is that I can actually feel when the bullet hits the person. I can feel it lodge into them. That's when it starts to get really close to home to me, is when you can actually feel this stuff. And it's very exhausting to be so sensitive and so even a very emotional type of person to actually get to that extreme. My husband can tell you that I sometimes even cry at puppy commercials. I mean, it's so disgusting. But, you know, the thing is that, you know, we have, not only do empaths react to humans, they also can react to animals and sense the way they're feeling and all that. And so I don't know how to explain that any further. I just know that whether you're overly sensitive or even to that degree, I did meet someone on a tour recently who was an empath, who also felt he could actually see dead people. And I decided to test his theory out a little bit on that tour, which I'll talk to you about as we go along here. Okay. When we get to that point. He had challenged me at one point that he could see dead people because he was that sensitive. And I thought, oh, nonsense. You know, it takes a lot to convince someone with a legal background. And so he pointed over to a tree, and he said, there he is. Shoot him, Kelly, shoot him, meaning with my camera. Mm-hmm. And I had my infrared camera with me at the time, and I just started shooting. And I thought, okay, let's prove this guy wrong, you know, tour guide or not. Sure enough, as God is my witness, I actually captured. And there is an orb theory here for those that are naysayers about orbs. There are real orbs and there are fake orbs. But where he pointed and where he thought this thing or entity was, I did capture it. And I thought, I just looked at him and I thought, what else is he going to show me tonight? And I'm going to talk a little bit about that as we go along, too. One of the things that I find really interesting here is when people want to, when I started out as a skeptic, I was kind of a hard sell.
Okay.
You know, and there's a lot of people out there that, and I agree, I was listening to your program a few nights ago, and I agree with the guests that you had on that had talked about, like, there's two different levels of people who believe, okay? There's the, or non-believers. There's the one that's, like, extremely religious to the point where there is absolutely, their beliefs are, like, rock solid, and then there's those people who are on the opposite end who are, like, atheists or don't believe in any of this, but the two extremes have a hard time being sold at, and I agree that, that why they're skeptical. And then there's us people in the middle. Yeah, maybe yes, maybe no. What's going on here, whatnot. But there was some research that I pulled up this morning about suggestibility. And the research felt that in some of these studies that people who are influenced by suggestion, meaning someone that they trust, someone that they believe, someone that may have lived this experience, depending on the level of spirituality in which you believe, might actually determine whether or not you buy into these theories a little bit more than others. Okay, so now I'm sitting here going, influenced by manipulation of perception. Interesting thought process here. I'm not going to completely knock it because there's probably something to it. However, how do you explain that to a person when they're really, really young, who is not necessarily into ghosts yet, who doesn't know what a ghost is? I'm talking even someone even younger than myself who is literally giving you details about somebody who's in their room and then or wherever in their house, and all of a sudden you're being told that, oh, no, it's by influence, by suggestion. I don't quite buy into that 100%. So when people ask me, well, if ghosts really exist, then why haven't I seen one, blah, 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 not my reaction to this is simply not everyone is open enough to tap into something. Some people are not sensitive enough. It's all in sometimes our hardwiring and our makeup. But we all know, especially in this ghost field, that sometimes in order to have an experience, sensitivity put aside, okay, or not, your timing needs to be there, chance has to be there, the cues have to be presented. The history of some of these locations can be often very key. Environmental conditions such as the weather. I'm big into moon phases, by the way. I live and breathe by moon phases. And, of course, your attitude about whether or not you truly want to exist if something is out there. So, anyway, I did a poll a couple of years ago, and I found out that from a group of people, various backgrounds, various religious affiliations, about 84%, this was in my poll, you're going to find different polls out there, 84% believe in ghosts, with many having an experience or wanting to have an experience. 11% remained skeptical, and 5% felt that ghosts were nothing but hype, imagined, or contrived. And that's kind of where that kind of ends that.
All right. Well, Dr. Schutz, let's do this. With that interesting information, let's take a break. When we come back, let's talk about one of the chapters in your book. You write about varying levels of hauntings and imprints, and I'm a little interested in that. Let's get into that and those levels of hauntings and imprints when we get back, okay? Let's take our break. We're talking with Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. There are five different books right now available. Is it at Amazon.com right now, Doctor?
Yes, I'm actually writing 6 and 7, but the first five are currently on Amazon.com. And also, I can give you my webpage before the show is over tonight.
Go ahead and give it right now. What's the website?
Okay, if you're interested in seeing the book covers of the first, actually all seven of them are on there right now, mm-hmm. but two of them are still being written. The website is www.paranormaluniversalpress.com. That's all one word, Paranormal. P-R-E-S-S, universalpress.com.
All right.
Thank you.
Paranormaluniversalpress.com. Check it out during the break and check out all of Dr. Schutz's books there. When we come back, we'll talk about hauntings and imprints with Dr. Schutz here on the best in Paranormal Talk Radio, Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the best in paranormal talk radio, Darkness Radio. Tim Dennison for Dave Schrader. Our guest is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz, and we're talking about her series of books on the paranormal. And, Doctor, the series of books is called Paranormal...
Encounters.
Encounters. I don't know why I wanted to say expectations. Paranormal Encounters. Five of them are now written. You're on the sixth and seventh books right now you're writing, correct?
Yes. Actually, the sixth book that I'm writing right now, it's going to be probably a very interesting book. This one is called Paranormal Encounters Through a Child's Eyes. And for this book that I'm currently writing, this one's kind of challenging because you need parental, permission on everything. You don't want to traumatize the child by reliving the experience and all that. But what this book is supposed to be when I get done with it is essentially a compilation of stories by children in young ages 4 to 20. You know, we've got teens in there and young adults, too, about their experiences with the paranormal. But it's going to be a little bit more sophisticated than that because, there's a lot to a child's mind, and because of that, you have to be really careful how you write it. Now, number seven is going to be, which I'm also writing at the same time here, it's just going to be a compilation of all of the stories. So there's going to be about 70 to 100 stories in that book regarding all the experiences I and a few others who are contributors have shared with me. So
Okay. That's
what's yet to come.
All right. In one of the chapters in your book, you write about varying levels of hauntings and imprints. Can you elaborate on each of these for our listeners? Hauntings and imprints, the difference between the two.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm just going to give you kind of all a mini bite of what this is. And I kind of would like your listeners to kind of think about this for a moment for me. I'd like you to kind of mentally participate while I go through each of these types to see if you can truly identify what type of haunting you think that you may have either encountered in your life or experienced, because there is quite a level of, I don't want to use the word severity, that's kind of strong, but there are different levels. So let's start with the first level, okay? So as I go along, just basically ask yourself the question, yes, I think I've experienced that. No, I haven't. And count up and see how many of these you've actually experienced. All right, so the first haunting type is basically the impression type. And the impression type is a very residual type, which means that the ghost is not actually aware of you in your surroundings. The ghost is basically just doing what it does. And sometimes often what happens here is an impression hauntings is something is triggered and it can happen any day without notice or the conditions are right. What you might hear or might see, or you might hear some light footsteps. I'm not talking heavy footsteps, light footsteps. You might feel some sensations around you, smell faint odors. You might experience cold spots. But essentially, an impression repeats itself in action and is not an intelligent ghost at all, which means that it's aware of you. Moving this into the residual imprint, of course, it starts out with the impression as being a replay, but a historical one might be like a reenactment. You hear about the battlefield all the time when, you hear about people or the soldiers reenacting things, and they might be dressed in period clothing. Crisis ghost, some of you may have had this experience. So a family member or a friend passes away. And so during the first weeks after their death, it can actually happen that they may come to visit you. And in fact, recently at a wedding in my family, there was a gal who had just passed from cancer. And I was shooting, of course, me with my camera, shooting some pictures in the church, and I actually captured what is a real orb, mind you, but it looked like it was a very sick-type orb, and we kind of determined that this person might have been actually that family member who just recently passed. So ask yourself if you think you've ever had a crisis ghost in your life. An anniversary ghost, which is also a residual ghost, may make visits. Sometimes you might go to a cemetery or someplace, you see something standing there, and then it vanishes. So it's an anniversary ghost that makes periodic visits. personal and family ghosts are those that might be attached to family members or hanging around you. Sometimes you kind of, someone might say, well, I think Grandpa is here today. And I am a believer, by the way, in animal ghosts as well. So you might actually say, you know, if I didn't know any better, I thought, you know, Buddy was still hanging around. So it's kind of interesting on the family ghosts. And finally, one of my most intriguing one, which I want to lead into a story on this, haunted objects. Okay, for those of you who like to do estate sales, garage sales, pick up things secondhand, I'm not discouraging you from doing that at all. I think you can find some really great stuff at these places. You just need to know that maybe on some of these items, you might have a little bit still hanging on there that comes home with you. So you might actually bring in a ghost into your house. Now, when we talk about residual hauntings, though, residual hauntings are like, again, a stronger sense of a playback. Usually the entity is can hold its energy for a longer period of time. I'll give an example. I was at a castle last year. I was lying in bed at night. I didn't think the room was haunted. It just so happens that about, 1:30, 2:15 in the morning, I felt something sit on my back. Now, some of you might be saying, oh, I know what that is. That's sleep paralysis. No, this wasn't sleep paralysis, unfortunately. It was reported to me the next day that, and I wiggled. I was able to wiggle, like in sleep paralysis, you usually can't move. And so it was reported to me the next day that about five different times during that year, they have had reports of someone sitting on people while they're lying in bed, whether it was their stomach or whether it was their back. And essentially, in a nutshell, it would go away. Once I wiggled, it went away. But that's a residual ghost. Someone that comes back, they don't know you exist, they do the routine. This one, like, just sit down somewhere, as it did in the past. There's an interactive ghost. Those are the ones that are a little bit more intelligent. They can communicate with you in some way, create sounds, move things, shut doors, open doors, turn keys in a door, can move clock dials, can drain your batteries, and can play with your electrical appliances. For example, have you ever had an issue with your microwave that just goes off by itself? That has been a common report. Televisions. My husband and I have experienced television issues. Now you're thinking, oh, no, that happens all the time, blah, blah, blah. There's a certain way a television can go on and off that only when you do this for a while you know whether or not it's real or not. Radios, that sort of thing. Everyone still with me? Let's move into the fourth type here. My favorite, poltergeist. Now, poltergeists usually get a bad rap because most people think that poltergeists are mean or angry, and there's a lot of them that can be if they're territorial. However, a poltergeist is generally known as a noisy ghost, and theories on it think that poltergeists only appear when there's young children going through their hormonal stages, all the way up to age 25. Well, surprise, I never had that as a youngster. My first experience with noisy ghosts was actually in my former home at the age of 45. Now I'm dating myself here, okay? So things that a poltergeist might do is you might be able to, it moves things, hides things. You might hear stronger footsteps. You know, your electrical items are being played with. You might get some rapping or thumping sounds, slamming of doors. Again, a lot of times they just want to seek your attention. There was one at a haunted inn that I stayed in Wales just recently. It liked its light to be on this particular picture, and the minute you took that light off and shut it off, it got really mad and it started thumping on the wall. Thump, 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 turn it back on. So these types of things are real, and poltergeists can play pranks. We've had them, in our house, and pranksters and stuff like that. So that's always my favorite. My first experience, though, with the poltergeist was when I started hearing, my cupboards were opening unexpectedly. I was hearing tapping. I had stuff moving in front of me. Stuff was taken and never to be found again. I was actually choked one night while I was sleeping. Some people would say that's sleep paralysis. It was not sleep paralysis. I was literally being choked by one, and essentially my husband became possessed once by a very active poltergeist when he spoke to me in a different tone that I had never heard before. this was the point that I knew we had to move, and we did. But let's not say that they don't get their revenge, because on moving day, all of a sudden, things are breaking down. You know, we were sitting here repairing stuff, and things that I really cherished were getting broken. And you might think, oh, that's just coincidentally sloppy, you know, packing. No. In my case, unfortunately, it was the ghost of the house that was angry that I was leaving, because it was attached so dearly to me, okay? I don't know too much about demonic hauntings. I have never really personally experienced a true demonic haunting. I've experienced angry haunts, but not demonic. But these can be quite aggressive and quite destructive. The next type is a shadow figure. I just was out on a tour in Las Vegas, and I did shoot a shadow figure in the men's bathroom. Now, I know what you're thinking right now. What was I doing in the men's bathroom?
Yes, well, that's what I'm thinking.
Yes, when you ghost hunt, my friends, you'll go to just about any extreme to capture your picture. So I was in the bathroom doing my thing, shooting around. But I did, interesting enough, the shadow, there's something I need to remind all of you about, is when you're taking pictures, do not destroy them if you think nothing is on them. You sit and you just let them sit in your camera or sit in your files up to a year. Sometimes these things can actually come out in your pictures. And so I didn't notice this until I was going home on the airplane, and I thought, oh my God. But the Pioneer Saloon out in Las Vegas, wonderful tour. It's called Ghost Springs Ghost Hunt, that is situated in Pioneer. A wonderful place, very haunted area, guaranteed to get ghost captures, I guarantee it. But yeah, this stuff is real and can happen. And by the way, I also had an experience in a church. I'm still a professional photographer, and I used to do weddings. But I was leaving the church once. I saw this black thing slither across the way, and I thought, must be like a reflection or something from outside. Went to investigate. There was none of that even possible. Went out of the church just to leave, and the thing actually tripped me, and I caught myself literally falling down steps and steps in these stairs. And I thought, whatever that was, I felt its foot, and away I went. So this stuff can be quite frightening and quite real. Now, the final one I want to talk about quickly is called a visual or manifestation haunting. And so these types of ghosts can be visually seen, and usually only for 3 to 5 seconds. So don't think a ghost is going to hang around for very long. They'll show themselves, and they will disappear. I've seen them in all kinds of forms, mist, ectoplasm, all kinds of forms. I've captured, you know, you do need an infrared light somewhere on your equipment to be able to see this stuff better if you really want to get some real stuff. I used to capture things on my disposable camera, print film. You know, people give a bad rap with orbs. Well, again, there are real orbs out there, and I certainly caught a number of them. So let's just, on this ghost hunt in Good Springs. So let's just say that this stuff can be real. But manifestation haunts are very, very interesting, because if you provoke them, they can become aggressive, and you got to be very careful about provoking a ghost. And that's what I want to lead into really quickly about three situations that I had where this happened. The first one that happened to me was where I was out in Groveland Hotel in California, and I was in a room, one of their haunted rooms, and essentially at night between 2:30, 2:45, I snore, and I guess the ghost in the room didn't appreciate snoring. So what it did was it literally, and I kid you not, I was sound asleep, and it kicked me up in the air underneath my back. If you can imagine being shoved up into the air, flying into the air, probably about 6 to 12 inches, and I caught myself waking up when I was bouncing on the bed. That one was because that ghost in that room didn't particularly like snoring, okay? So that took care of that one. Example two, recently at the Prince Rupert Hotel in Wales. This one, my dears, will not only chill you, but frighten the bejeebies out of you. We were in one of their century rooms, and it was a very known haunted room. So what I did when I went in there is I removed all of the objects that could be of danger. And I also put something in front of the bathroom door because it was known to slam that bathroom door. Okay, so here we are. We're getting ready for bed. And my husband, he takes out his holy water because he's a very, very strong Catholic. And he starts reading off this protection prayer. No sooner than he did this, by the way. And if you guys know what a floor-length oval mirror looks like, and this is God is my witness, I'm standing there looking at this mirror. He's reading this protection prayer. We're getting ready for bed. And the next thing you know it, the minute he started saying that prayer, that mirror, oval, long, length mirror, I was started cycling around like you would see something at a circus. And I am not kidding you. I stood there. I looked at this thing. It's like, it was almost like it was kind of going na, 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 na at me, and it was going around, and I just froze in my tracks. I didn't know whether or not to hold up a card and give it an 8.5 out of a 10 for its effort. I didn't know whether to start clapping with joy because I actually saw something that did it on its own and something amazing that most people don't experience, or whether to run like crazy out of there. Well, that place has about 12 ghosts. I've written about most of them in my book, and I have pictures of that mirror and everything in my book number 5, which is called Paranormal Encounters, Hanging Around. And if you want to see it, buy the book. I'm not encouraging you to, but I'm just telling you, some of this stuff is amazing.
Dr. Schutz, we are way late for a break. We got to take a break here. When we come back, let's wrap up our talk here. We come back with more with Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz right after this on Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the best in paranormal talk radio, Darkness Radio. Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz is our guest. Just a couple of minutes left, literally 2 minutes left here with you, Doctor. You said you had one more story here. What you did? We had 2 out of 3, right?
Yep, I've got one more, and
okay.
Then I've got a very short one about daytime ghosts, and
okay.
Then we can wrap it up really fast.
You have to. Time stops for no radio person. You have exactly a minute and a half. Go.
Here I go. Okay, so just recently again on that Good Springs Ghost Tour, the power of a ghost, very simply, being provoked by our tour guide, literally. So I don't want to use the word pissing off, but I'm going to have to say it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Pissing off one or two ghosts on our little tour in their cabins. So what will happen with the ghost if they get really mad at you? You better be careful if you're not ready, because this ghost decided to take out the young girl in our group. And what happened with that one was that she, we were standing in a dark cabin there. He was trying to provoke the ghost in the cabin. And what happened was the ghost decided, well, you know what? I'm going to give you the impression I'm going to take her out. So what he did was she went down. We're in pitch dark while this was happening. She went down, fainted, and hit that floor so hard we had to drag her out of there. But my cautionary statement to all of you is this: don't provoke a ghost unless you know what you're doing, because some of these ghosts are actually stronger than this may appear. Which leads me into my final thing here, which ghosts can actually appear during the daytime. Okay, so I want to tell you a little bit about my experience at the Haunted Museum in Las Vegas.
30 seconds, wrap it up.
All right, basically, in a nutshell, I captured ectoplasmic mist outside the building at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. This stuff is real. It can show itself, and it is a very haunted museum that eventually will open up very soon, from my understandings. And that's it.
That is perfect. Look at that. Dr. Kelly Schutz, Kelly Renee Schutz has been our guest. ParanormalUniversalPress.com is where you can check out the books. There are 5 Paranormal Encounters books in all there. 6 and 7 are being written as we speak right now. Dr. Schutz, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Thank you. Tomorrow night, more strange and supernatural here on the best in Paranormal Talk Radio, Darkness Radio. And of course, Friday night, you don't have to listen to Minnesota Vikings football. You can tune in on the iHeartRadio app. You can tune in at darknessradio.com, and you can hear a brand new show. That's right, folks. You don't have to hear Minnesota Vikings football. But if you do want to hear it, you can listen locally on AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Stay tuned. George Norrie and Coast to Coast AM is next. I'm Tim Dennison for Dave Schrader, and you've been listening to Darkness Radio.